Last week, in the first program featuring Pat Patterson and his story, Pat took us up to 1926 and the discovery of actress Jean Harlow by the eccentric Howard Hughes. 1926 continued as a difficult financial year for Pat at his Western Avenue airfield in Los Angeles. Boogie Blues were in that year for a good reason. And here's Jimmy Blythe with Mr. Freddie Blues, recorded in that year. Decided to sell his interest in the airfield and join forces with Bill Waterhouse, who was formerly the partner of aircraft designer Douglas, and together with three other partners, build a monoplane. They felt they had an idea for an engine that would be better than any others available at that time. The Reich Aeronautical Company had already developed the Whirlwind radial engine, and the U.S. Army and Navy had installed these in some of their aircraft. Pat, as broke as ever, went to Naval Headquarters in San Diego and found a lot of engine parts on the junk pile. He and his partners collected bits and pieces over a period of 7 to 8 months to enable them to build their engine. While Pat Patterson and his partners struggled, the rest of America was determined to continue its frantic enjoyment of life. Cabaret, vaudeville, and the Ziegfeld Follies remained highly popular, and those performers graduated to film and recording contracts. One of the best and most attractive was Ruth Etting.
I was all so blue till you came along, just to make my life a wonderful song. Sunshine brought to brighten my loneliness. Is it any wonder in my happiness? I confess, do I want you? Oh my, do I, honey? Do I need you? Oh my, do I?
was finally completed and put in the monoplane, which was to be sold under the name of the Cruise Air. But tough times were not yet over. The partners ran out of money before completion of the plane. Then in stepped a knight in shining armor from Klamath Falls, Oregon, with enough money to complete the project. Pat and one of his partners, another pilot named Eddie Belenti, tossed a coin to determine who would make the first test flight. Pat lost, but the plane was outstandingly successful. It outperformed every aeroplane in the same class at the naval base in San Diego. Back to the entertainment circuit briefly, and popular radio singer Whispering Jack Smith was crooning this rather coy and simple song.
Boy was wild about a little girl who found it out. She tried to play so hard to get. You know, he hasn't even kissed her yet. He comes around and she turns him down, comes back again and hangs around waiting for one kiss while he pleads like this. Oh, give me a little kiss, will you, huh? What do you want to miss, will you, huh? Gosh, oh, gee, why do you refuse? You know, I can't see what you've got to lose. Oh, give me a little squeeze, will you, huh? Why do you want to make me blue? You know, I wouldn't say a word if I were asking for the world. What's a little kiss between a fella and his girl, huh? Oh, give me a little kiss, will you, huh? And I'll give it right back to you. It's been a year since first they met, and he hasn't quite succeeded yet. A month ago, why, he held her hand, and his patience, well, I can't quite understand. That they're engaged don't mean a thing. He's in a rage, and he takes back his ring. Gives it back once more, while he starts to roar. Oh, give me a little kiss, will you, huh? What are you gonna miss, will you, huh? Gosh, oh, gee, why do you refuse? You know, I can't see what you've got to lose. Oh, give me a little squeeze, will you, huh? Why do you want to make me blue? You know, I wouldn't say a word if I were asking for the world. What's a little kiss between a feller and his girl? Oh, give me a little kiss, will you, huh? And I'll give it right back to you. And then she says, give me a little coat, will you, huh? Sable or mink or goat, will you, huh? You know, my poor hand, you're as bare as anything. And I could stand a little bracelet, maybe a diamond ring. Eh, give me a little car, will you, huh? That would be mighty nice to do. A Packard or a Lincoln or a Cadillac sedan. Well, I'll even take a Rolls, and you can add a chauffeur man. But don't you give me a little Ford, will you, huh? Or I'll give it right back to you.
And here's where Pat Patterson's story takes an historically interesting turn. Claude Ryan of Ryan Aeronautical, San Diego, together with his partner, Gorse, won the first contract to fly mail between San Diego and Seattle and decided the Cruise Air was the plane for the job, but he wanted six of them. Pat and his partners didn't have the money to even start the work, so they sold the design to Claude Ryan. At the same time, Charles Lindbergh was contemplating his Atlantic flight and was looking for a suitable aeroplane. Lindbergh had heard about the Cruise Air and decided that was the one for him, and Claude Ryan was commissioned to build what was to become the Spirit of St. Louis. Halfway through the job, Ryan went broke, and the sheriff padlocked the premises. Once again, out of the blue rode another knight to the rescue, and the plane was completed to make that famous flight in May 1927.
a bird on high, out to do or die on his journey over there. Many million hearts beat for him, and the whole world said a prayer. For Lindbergh, oh, what a flying fool was he. Lindbergh, his name will live in history. Over the ocean he flew all alone, gambling with fate and with dangers unknown. Others may take that trip across the sea upon some future day. But take your hats off to plucky, lucky Lindbergh, the eagle of the USA. Right to his post as he flew from coast to coast, making good his early boast. In the far off west, one he loved the best said a prayer to God above, and she guided him and helped him with a mother's wondrous love. For Lindbergh, oh, what a flying fool was he. Lindbergh, his name will live in history. Over the ocean he flew all alone, gambling with fate and with dangers unknown. Others may make that trip across the sea upon some future day. But take your hats off to plucky, lucky Lindbergh, the eagle of the USA. Across the sea upon some future day, but take your hats off to plucky, lucky Lindbergh, the eagle of the USA.
I asked Pat Patterson how he fared over the cruise air experience.
Did you ever make any money out of it?
Nothing. The only one that ever made any money out of it was the chap in San Diego who bailed the company out of its trouble. And when the St. Louis company bought the design for the airplane from Ryan, he got about $1.5 million. And it took him just 1 year to fall off a barstool dead.
Although Claude Ryan was given credit for the design of the Spirit of St. Louis, Lindbergh knew that Pat Patterson and Eddie Belenti had designed and made the original. He met and talked with them when he went to check on the progress of his plane. Pat and Belenti were in possession of all the original data and design work, building plans, pictures, and test flight results on the Cruisair, but decided between themselves not to fight for recognition. This is actually the first time this story has been publicly released.
Do you ever feel a little bit... I suppose sad's not the word to use, but a little bit angry that you haven't gotten the credit for things that you've worked on?
Oh, no. And then in the aviation business, it's a big club. And one member doesn't attack another.
For the new, you'll find out it will never do. When you grow old, you don't last long. You're here today, tomorrow you're gone. I loved a man for many years gone by. I never thought his love for me would die. But he made some changes from old to new. And now I'm gonna make some changes too. There'll be a change in the weather, a change in the sea. From now on, there's gonna be a change in me. My walk will be different, my talk and my name. Ain't nothing ever about me gonna be the same. I'm gonna change my long, tall one for a little short, fat. I'm even gonna change the number where I'm living at. 'Cause nobody wants you when you're old and gray. There's gonna be some changes made today. There's gonna be some changes made. I'm gonna change to new fashions, change to new shoes. I'm even gonna change the bootlegger that brings me my booze. I'm gonna change everything from old to new. I'm gonna learn to do the same as other girls do. Why, I'm a nice plump mama. I've got lots of speed. I've got everything a good man needs. But nobody wants me when I'm old and gray. There's gonna be some changes made today. There's gonna be some changes made.
The large, lusty, and bespangled Sophie Tucker, recorded in 1927. This series of interviews with Pat Patterson was recorded in his study, a room packed with memories and mementos of earlier times. His leather flying helmet, now looking somewhat like an historic prune. Walls covered in framed certificates, cartoons, press clippings, pilot's licenses, and photographs, including one of aviatrix Amelia Earhart.
I met her just before she left on her final fatal flight. And I had this picture of her, which is an unusual picture of her.
She's very, very pretty in that picture.
Yes.
She didn't actually look like that?
Not when she was working, no. I asked her to autograph it for me, and she said she was in a hurry, and she said, oh, I'll autograph when I come back. It'll be worth more then.
And she never made it back?
Never made it back.
What happened on that trip?
Well, from what I learned from the military, who were still keeping the details under security, she had a co-pilot, an engineer, with her, who was a habitual alcoholic. Everybody tried to talk her out of taking him, taking somebody better qualified, but she had made a couple of flights with him and was very sore on his navigation. And so she insisted that he go with him, with her. And on the last stage of the flight, in an area where she went down was a U.S. cruiser with the beam signals to pick her up and guide her. They had her on radar, but she flew right by and obviously ran out of fuel. He was short of fuel then, ran out of fuel and went down in the ocean somewhere.
Why do you think it's still being treated in such a secretive way, her disappearance?
Well, because it was a very touchy time with the Japanese. And that's why so many stories came out that she went down, landed on a Japanese island, the Japanese locked them both up, and they died of dysentery. That's one of the stories. But that's not true at all.
But when you think of the amount of information that's been released, World War II has been over since 1945, and she flew long before that.
Well, they claimed that there was a lot of secret stuff in the airplane. Actually, there was a Lockheed Lodestar, and all they did really was put in larger engines, give her a little more speed and a little more range. But as far as any secret equipment on the airplane, there wasn't anything. Just straight navigation equipment.
Of course, the fact that I'm keeping it secret only enhances all the gossip and all the stories that build up around it. She didn't take this navigator with her because she might have been in love with him, was she? Did she?
No, I don't think so. No, she was married then, you know. It was just simply that she had full confidence in his navigation. When she took off, just before she took off, they sent people on board and scoured the airplane looking for any liquor on board. They never found anything. But he got it on somehow.
Amelia Earhart is still acknowledged as the world's outstanding aviatrix. As a passenger, she was the first woman to fly the Atlantic in 1928, then made history with a solo flight in 1932. She was also the first person to make a successful solo flight between California and Hawaii. All others had ended in disaster. And it was on her round-the-world flight in July 1937 that she disappeared in the South Pacific Ocean. Chronologically, we've jumped a little ahead in Pat Patterson's story, so let's return to 1928. The aviation business was not going Pat's way at all. But another man was successful beyond his wildest dreams, making motor cars. Henry Ford, who had ceased production of the Model T, the Tin Lizzie, in 1927, and introduced the Model A in 1928.
Ernest, who's that coming down the street?
Oh, look her over. Ain't she sweet?
That's not Lizzie, is it? How she's changed.
Yes, she's a lady now. She's outgrown her rattle.
Not a rattle in a car load. I suppose she has more tin now than she ever had.
Yes, you never see her in alleyways anymore. She now sports the boulevard.
Introduce me, will you?
Why, certainly. Sir Walter Raleigh, meet Queen Elizabeth.
Carbureted, I'm sure. Carbureted. Have you seen her? Ain't she great? She's something you'll appreciate.
Say, I don't understand just who you mean.
You don't? Why, everybody everywhere is falling for her now.
Say, do you mean the new Ford?
I do, and it's a wow. Lay off people, lay off folks. None of your sarcastic jokes. Henry's made a lady out of Lizzie.
And no more bruises, no more aches. She now's got those four-wheel brakes. Henry's made a lady out of Lizzie.
She's even got a rumble seat and lots of style and flair.
The horn just seems to holler out, toot, toot, they shall not pass.
The Lincoln car is made of tin.
Their sisters underneath the skin.
Henry's made a lady out of Lizzie.
She's a great old girl, Ernest.
You bet she was, Bill.
Now, when you see her, you'll agree she's just the thing for you and me.
I bet she's got most anything you'd ask.
Yes, sitting pretty. Yes, I am. With her, I'm always found.
Say, how about her chassis?
It's sure the best around. Now she's even learned to stop for every single traffic cop. Henry's made a lady out of Lizzie.
Not a rattle, not a bit. Lizzie now has lots of it. Henry made a lady out of Lizzie.
There's everything inside her now except a kitchen sink.
A mirror and a powder puff. A shower bath, I think.
I'll bet my socks that this Miss Ford
will live as long as Fanny Ward.
Henry's made a lady out of Lizzie. C-O-D and F-O-B, all you need is Do-Re-Mi. Henry's made a lady out of Lizzie. Since he lifted up her face, she travels at an awful pace. Henry's made a lady out of Lizzie.
She's not like Calvin Coolidge, she's a girl who likes her fun.
he says, imagine anyone who doesn't choose to run.
Good for sister, nice for ma, everybody ride but pa. Henry's made a lady out of Lizzie.
After the Cruise Air episode, Pat went to New York to become vice president and sales manager at the General Airplanes Corporation, building planes for the U.S. Mail Service. It was at this factory they built the first all-metal plane. Most of the engineers were Russian, one of whom was Sergeyevsky. All went well until 1929. 1929, the year that many people would rank as the most significant of the century, the year of the Great Crash, and when silent movies became as passé as prosperity. Until then, the 20s had brought a new vibrancy and confidence in an increasingly modern era, built mainly on credit.
Once I built a railroad, I made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done, brother. Can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower up to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we look swell, full of that Yankee doodly-dum. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with a drum. Say, don't you remember, they called me Al. It was Al all the time. Why don't you remember? I'm your pal. Say, buddy, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, ah, gee, we look swell, full of that Yankee doodly-dum. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with a drum. Oh, say, don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al all the time. Say, don't you remember? I'm your pal. Buddy, can you spare a dime?
Pat Patterson, on his uppers again, and rescued again in 1930.
And that's when a friend of mine came from China and said that Chiang Kai-shek was building an air force and I should get representations of military airplanes and spare parts and aviation equipment in general, and come over there. And I said, look, I'm cleaned out by this bank crash like everybody else. I have no money. So he had enough money to put up, and we bought one small trainer that we thought might be good for that purpose. But the company went broke before we could ship it. So then I had a call from Canada, from Reuben Fleet, who had the Fleet Aircraft Company in Canada, and they were building a small primary trainer biplane. And he called me, and asked me to come up. I had to tell him I had no money. So he sent me the fare, and then made a deal with us. He shipped the first airplane prepaid to China. Well, it took us about a year to sell them, but when we did, we sold quite a few. I think the first order was for about 15. I arrived over there in 30 in Shanghai, and it would be about 32 that we actually got the order.
And this is the days when Shanghai was the fairyland of the East?
Yes, you could live like a king on a pauper's income. No question about that. And it was the Paris of the East. Nobody, I think, ever knew how many nightclubs and there were. There were just literally hundreds of them.
But was it a city that sheltered a lot of con men as well? Was everybody in there trying to make a buck because it was something of a boom place?
I've covered every little highway, and I've been climbing every hill. I've been looking high, and I've been looking low, looking for my Shanghai Lil. The stars that hang high over Shanghai bring back the memory of a thrill. I've been looking high, and I've been looking low, looking for my Shanghai Lil. I learned to love her. The little devil was just a butterfly. But you discover something on the level shining in her eye. Oh, I've been trying to forget her, but what's the use? I never will. I'll be looking high and I'll be looking low, looking for my Shanghai Lil.
I miss you very much, a long time. I think that you no love me still.
I've been looking high and I've been looking low, looking for you, Shanghai Lil.
I think you go with other sweethearts, and very many tears I spill.
He's been looking high and he's been looking low, looking for you, Shanghai Lil.
I got new lovers.
You little devil, you're just a butterfly.
I like new lovers.
You're still on the level, you can kid this guy.
I pray to Buddha in the Josh house, and Buddha, he bring back my bill.
He's been looking high, and he's been looking low, looking for your Shanghai Lil.
Pat met and married his first wife in Chicago in 1919, during the winter months when he was flying the U.S. mail. His barnstorming feats were confined to the summertime. There was a daughter born of that marriage, Pat's only child, who lives in San Francisco.
The kind of life you were leading must have been very difficult on a marriage. You traveling the country, barnstorming.
Well, it wasn't good for marriage, that's for certain. Didn't help any. And then when I went to China, of course, we had a very friendly divorce because I didn't know what the future had or when I'd be back, if I'd ever get back. So we thought that'd be best to do.
So you went, you came to China as a bachelor?
Yes. Then I met a Chinese girl in Shanghai, and when the Sino-Jap War broke out, we had to shift our office from Shanghai to Hong Kong. And the Hong Kong government would not permit anyone who wasn't working for our company to come into Hong Kong. Of course, she wasn't, so I sent her to the United States to school. And married her later in the States. Same thing happened when I came back out here. Didn't know how long or what the future was, so again, I didn't think it was fair to leave her in that place. She did not want to come back to China.
On his return to China, Pat Patterson wasn't short of something to do. It was the time of the Sino-Japanese War.
Well, I went back up to... I spent most of my time in the interior of China, going around to the various air bases the Japanese hadn't taken over. And doing odd jobs for the Air Force one way or another. As a matter of fact, they asked me if I could bring them. They needed some big heavy trucks for the military in Hankow. So we bought 6 big 5-ton Mack trucks, had them shipped into Hanoi, because the Japanese were all, had taken all the property outside of Hong Kong. And in order to, I knew that I had to go through Japanese lines and Chinese lines, so we loaded the 5-ton trucks with medical supplies of all kinds, which the Chinese Army approved me to do. And we started out and drove those trucks out of Hanoi, up over the roads that are indescribable. Dirt trails. Sometimes we went where there weren't even any dirt trails. We had to build floats to take the trucks over a lot of the rivers or washes. And it took us 2.5 months to make the trip to Shanghai, to Hankou. We went through 2 Japanese lines, and amazingly, the Japanese took very little of our cargo. The only thing that they wanted was the radiator cap, which was the famous Mack truck Bulldog. And fortunately, I had ordered a dozen of those separately because I knew that that would be the attraction. So we gave them those Bulldogs. But when we went through the Chinese lines, which we did 4 or 5 times, we arrived in Hankou with only about a third of the cargo left.
But they obviously were pretty desperate.
The Chinese really took the main part of the load.
But they would have been desperate for supplies then, were they?
Yes, they were, of course. Mm. And, of course, they got the Bulldogs, too.
I can imagine the area then, we're talking about 1937-38, was pretty primitive. You said you had to build rafts and ford streams and such things. It'd be a very grueling trip.
There were no main roads. Well, once in a while we hit a few miles of a fairly decent macadam road, but very little. The military and the Hankou were amazed that we got through it all.
So here we are in 1938, the Sino-Japanese War and stirrings of war in Europe. But in the USA, it was a great year for individual songs and stage and film musicals. That year witnessed the birth of a great star of Broadway in Leave It to Me, Mary Martin. In the musical, she sang this song, which was performed as a sort of striptease at a Siberian railroad station. Yes, I know, I'm asking you to suspend your disbelief just momentarily.
While tearing off a game of golf, I may make a play for the caddy, but when I do, I don't follow through, 'cause my heart belongs to Daddy. If I invite a boy some night to dine on my fine Finnan patty, I just adore his asking for more, but my heart belongs to Daddy. Yes, my heart belongs to Daddy, so I simply couldn't be bad. Yes, my heart belongs to Daddy. Dad, 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 dad. So I want to warn you, laddie, though I think you perfectly well, that my heart belongs to Daddy, 'cause my daddy, he treats it so well.
Dad, dad, dad.
eats it and treats it, and then he repeats it. Yes, Daddy, he treats it so well.
And we'll return to Pat Patterson's story next week in The Pleasure's House.
I'm Josephine in my flying machine, going up, she goes, she goes. Balance herself like a bird on a beam. In the air she goes, where, there she goes. Up, up, a little bit higher. Oh, look, the moon is on fire. Come Josephine in my flying machine, going up, going up. Goodbye. ¶¶